Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, it's a Rebooting the News podcast with, and here's that awkward moment where I try to find out if Jay Rosen's here. Jay, you here?
I'm here. Hi,
oh,
Dave.
Hey. Wasn't so awkward today.
Worked fine, and here
cool.
We are at a new season of Rebooting the News.
Isn't that funny? What happened to summer? Where did it go?
And it's been a big week in user land, if I may use that expression in generic terms, because as the blog read write web tells me, WordPress just saved millions of blogs real time with RSS Cloud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's review this development. What does that headline mean? And what actually happened to cause that development?
Well, I think we've talked about RSS Cloud before on this
yes.
podcast, right? I mean, it's a bit of technology, and, you know, it's basically wires that connect up different pieces of software. So it's like plumbing. And I got an email from Matt Mullenweg, who is the chief guy at Automatic, which is the company that makes WordPress. I think it was like about a month and a half ago, and he said, "You know, let's have lunch." And so I went into San Francisco. I had lunch with him, and I was fully expecting that I would be pitching him on supporting RSS Cloud, but instead he said, "No, we're already decided to do it. I just want to have lunch with you." So it's one of the things I like about Matt is that he is like he's very no nonsense and. You don't have to, it's not like trading. You know, there's a lot of guys that will just wait for something like this to be inevitable, but a guy like Matt will make it inevitable by supporting him like this. So so he's a wonderful guy to have around in the industry. But what does it mean is that all of the blogs that are hosted on WordPress.com got this new capability, and there's many millions of them. Half a million new blogs come online there every month. And also any blog that's hosted with this gets the capability. So what does it mean? It means that at the next level, it means that these blogs are now real-time, which means that if you use reader software that is adapted to support RSS Cloud, so he's got the content-producing software. So that's been adapted to do this. You know, it's all part of this thing that we call a bootstrap, right? Because he wasn't, like, I did this with Scripting News. I did it with this podcast that we're doing right now. It's supported RSS Cloud for about a month now. I mean, there have been, and then a few days ago I came out with, like, 1,100 different feeds that were supporting it. And now we go from 1,100 some odd to 8 million, right? But it's a bootstrap. It's step by step. Now we have River 2, which is the reader that I shipped. Again, about a month ago, that supports RSS Cloud on the aggregation side. So it's the equivalent of something like Google Reader or TweetDeck or Seismic or Tweety. It's something that is a reader for news. And in addition to reading RSS feeds, it also reads these new cloud-enabled feeds. What that means is that one of those feeds updates, it gets the update immediately. It gets it, like, within a second. So normally a feed reader might take, you know, as much as an hour to notice a change because it just has to poll, you know, to find out, has this changed? It's checking all the time. But it can only do it so often, so it's generally a little bit slow. It's a lot slower than something like Twitter. Well, this says basically, okay, RSS now can behave just like Twitter, and it can be just as real-time. So the first blog that I wired up, the new blog using WordPress, was inberkeley.com, and I tested it out with my River 2 aggregator, and I posted a test post, and sure enough, there it was. And then this morning, one of our developers, Jeremy Felt, found a CNN news source that had been adapted to this. Now we're starting to get really interesting. And it was their CNN Political Wire, and so I subscribed to that, and it worked. And now I'm getting news items every, like, 10 seconds from them. that, you know, are coming to me over RSS. There's no company in the middle of this, Jay. That's the important part, okay? It's like it used to be that you either had RSS, and that meant no company in the middle, but it was slow, or it was fast, and that, but that meant you had a company in the middle. This gives you the ability to have the fast without a company in the middle.
Okay, so if I'm your typical reasonably web-aware news hound who wants to monitor lots of blogs and news sites, how does this change my situation? What's different for me as a user who's trying to keep up with the news?
So are you using a cloud-aware reader?
So if I use River2 or I use other...
There is no other right now. It's the only one at this point. There will be others. You can be sure. With 8 million blogs out there supporting it, you can be absolutely sure there will be others.
Okay, so there will be others. So I'll use some service that allows me to collect those fees. How is that going to be different than the situation today for such a user?
Faster.
And because it's faster, that changes blogging how?
Makes it like Twitter.
So then I could assemble a list of blogs that would resemble the inflow from my Twitter feed.
Maybe, yes. And yes. But to really get it to resemble your Twitter feed, have I ever used the term loosely coupled 140-character message network?
Yes.
Here? That's what we're talking about, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it would be, so to really get it to look and behave like Twitter, what you would do is you'd have, your client, like a TweetDeck or a Brizzly or a Seismic or whatever, would just, instead of publishing to Twitter, would just publish to one of these feeds. That's all. It would be transparent, just different plumbing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Just a different way of publishing to the user, absolutely no difference, except for the fact, here's a big difference. There's never been a fail whale in RSS, and there is no suggested user list either. And there can't be a suggested user list.
So it's a way, in theory, for me to produce the kind of flow that I get from my Twitter feed purely by using this decentralized system and not having to go through any company, Twitter included, and therefore suffer fail whales, downtime, or this annoying new step that Twitter inserted where they have to count my clicks before they'll actually connect me to someone's link.
Oh, we should talk about that separately. That's a good thing to talk to come back.
It's really pissing me off.
Yes. Yeah, no, you won't have that. Jay, I think the way to think about it is that that you can implement something like Twitter with just the internet.
So we're a step closer.
You don't need anything more. You don't need anything more than the internet to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, it's okay at first to use a company to get one of these things going. It's like, you know, learning how to ride a bike with training wheels with your father holding the back seat, you know, the back of the seat. But eventually, you got to ask dad to let go, and you got to ride without the training wheels. And then once you do that, you could go anywhere. And that's the point. The point is that we've been held back. Here's another big one, okay? Never mind the fail whales. Those are problem enough. But the fact that they've been having to deal with all these scaling issues has meant that they haven't been able to put any new features in at the center.
Mm-hmm.
It comes at a very, very slow pace. Yet you see all this innovation happening at the edges. It's a furious, highly competitive market. All these new services coming up on Twitter, but yet they're all being held back by the fact that Twitter just can't move because they're so completely clogged with all of the flow that's coming from all this growth that they've had. See, we're all paying the price for the fact that this is so heavily centralized, and it's just inevitable that it will get decentralized at some point. And that's really what you're seeing happen here, is that this is the today really was the day, is the day when it may be the turning point, Jay. This today might be the actual day when we look back and say this is when it turned, okay? But at the very least, this tells you that a decompression, a decentralization is underway at this point. It's sort of like, you know, you can't tell when the recession started or when the recession ended until a few quarters afterwards. It's the same
right.
kind of thing. You know, it's the same kind of thing. We won't know for sure until later, but it sort of feels that way right now.
Well, I have one more question about this. Doesn't it all depend on users starting to pick up these tools like River 2? I mean, it RSS depended on people starting to use Google Reader and blog lines and other services,
right? Well, it started before Google Reader and blog lines, right? Before Google Reader and blog lines, there were two tools that people used, MyNetscape.com and MyUserLand.com, okay? Those are both no longer in use, but and they haven't been in use for a very long time. But that's how Bootstraps work.
But doesn't it depend to some degree on whether users use the new aggregators?
Yes, it depends entirely on whether users use the new aggregators. But you don't need very many users to get the Bootstrap going.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, for River 2 right now, we got plenty of users. We got enough users to be sure that this thing gets to the next stage of the Bootstrap. It's already going there. I mean, I'm getting constant. Here are the indicators, right? A week ago at this time, wasn't getting any feedback. I don't think anybody was using it but me. Okay. Now I'm getting tons of feedback. I know that it's working for some large percentage of the people that use it. It's not working for everybody, but it's working for most of them. Plus, here's another one: is that support questions that people have are being answered by the users of the product, which frees me up to do development of the product. So what you see is a community booting up here that is, now some of these people, Jay, are going to go on and compete with River 2. I know that for a fact. Some of them have told me that they're going to, and my answer is, yeah, that's fine. That's why I'm doing it. I mean,
yeah.
It's sort of like, Huckleberry Finn with the, with the painting of the fence, whitewashing the fence, right? I'm trying to make it look really like it's a lot of fun so that other people get the idea
right.
that they should do it too.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, eventually, I think Google Reader has to do it now, by the way. I don't think they really, I think they'll look at it, and I think they'll decide to do it. And might be too strong a term for it, but has to in the sense that, if a new kind of bat comes up and you're a home run hitter, right, and this bat, everybody says, boy, you'll hit 5% more home runs if you use this bat instead of the old one. Of course you got to use the new bat.
Well, I can tell you how I would start using it. I would love to assemble my own list of the sources that I know I rely on to find the stuff that I send out over my Twitter feed.
Mm-hmm.
So if I could have like a special incoming news source alert system, I'd put Read Write Web in there. I would put everything James Fallows writes in there. I would put certain sections of the New York Times in there. I would put Romanesco, this media criticism site that I follow closely, in there. I'd put Scripting News, a Buzz Machine, and others. And I would keep it smaller than the number of people I follow, but it would be news sources that are likely to contain new items that I want to distribute to the 25,000 people who right now follow me on Twitter.
Great.
And it would be incredibly useful for me to do that, because I don't always remember to check what James Fallows has put up at his Atlantic blog, to have a hand-built inflow of news sources that send out alerts whenever they publish something would be great. What I don't understand is, how much do I get from an update on RSS Cloud? Is it 140 characters? Is it the first lines? Is it a summary that the author writes? What do I get? What does it look like?
Well, it varies. The way I have it configured right now, and this is, first of all, it's not cast in concrete. It could be changed. As I give you the first 500 characters of whatever it is that they've posted.
Mm-hmm.
If it's the New York Times, it's the first 500 characters of their synopsis. which pretty sure gives you the whole synopsis. And they write beautiful synopses at the New York Times. And so it's very, very good for what they do, as do most professional news organizations write very good synopses. For some of the blogs, there's this whole controversy about, and it's been going on forever, as to whether or not they should include the full content of the piece versus a summary of it. And I know that I'm the outlier on this, but I've always wanted the summary because I believe in what I call the river of news, and I have to be able to skim. I don't write a news reader. See, I've never liked the term news reader because that's not what I do. I write a news skimmer. And so because that reflects the way I, you know, subscribe to just a huge number of sources. And what my eye is very, very good at skimming. It's people think that they have to read every word to get an idea of what is on a page, and they don't. That's not the way the human brain works. The human brain is capable of recognizing patterns in a lot less time than you think it is. If you actually try it, you'll see that you can actually make some sense out of a lot of content, a lot more content than you think you can. So that's why I need this. So what I did in this one, and this is heavy-handed, but you know what? Nobody's even noticed yet that I do it, okay? Because if they noticed it, I bet they would complain. Is what I do is I strip out all the HTML, and I truncated it 500 characters. And it works. It really works. Now, I can make that a setting, so you can try it at 700 characters or 200 characters. And you can play around with it. I fully intend to make it a setting, even though nobody has asked for it to be a setting yet.
But if I'm a blogger, why can't I write my own blurb for the post that gets sent out over RSS Cloud?
I got to say, you just described Radio 8, which is the product that I shipped in 2002. That's exactly what happened. We had a post button on every aggregator item, and when you wanted to share it, it would then put it in a little edit box and put the headline with the link and then the blurb, and then you could write whatever you want to after it.
So that's what I would do.
Time. Yeah, we're going to give you there's a share button in the aggregator. I haven't actually filled it in yet in River 2. But, you know, I'm working any features every day. The feature I'm working on right now is something I think that you're going to love. I have a deal with Agence France Presse. I don't know if I pronounced that right. And they give me a full feed of all of their pictures, right? They've got this incredible photography flow. And I've had it now for like about a year and a half, and I haven't been able to get anybody's attention with it. I've talked to a number of editors and reporters and asked them, would you please write about this because I think it's important. And nobody's written about it. Nobody wants to. So, but it's the most amazing thing. What you do is you basically take these pictures and flow them through your screensaver, and you just let it kick in when it's ready to kick in, and all of a sudden there's the news flowing by you in a very, very beautiful visual way.
I have it on my screensaver. You gave it to me a long time ago.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
And you have it?
Yeah. I see it all the time.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
That is so cool. Well, you're all set, ready to... Jay, you really surprised me. Wow.
Yeah. But they
need caption. I'm going to be giving that to everybody who uses River 2.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on. That's quite a development. All those things we just talked about were
Very
important.
I'm glad you like it. Yeah, it's cool.
I
want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Okay. You told me, or I think you put up a post about this. I'm not sure how I heard about this from you. It was one of your many channels. That Columbia University had done something, their journalism school, had done something that you considered really innovative, which is they required their incoming students to come in and do, I think it was a month worth of technical training. Is that
right? 3 weeks.
3 weeks? Okay.
Yeah.
So why did you like that, and what was it? What did they teach them?
Well, I said it was smart. I didn't say it was innovative in the sense that nobody else had ever done it. But it was smart for them because they have a one-year program there, September to June. And they found, of course, that they couldn't teach students everything they needed to teach them in terms of the technologies that they are adept at, and furthermore, that a lot of the faculty aren't actually very good with these skills either. And it was a lot easier to bring the students in early than it was to change the entire curriculum or change the faculty. And they convinced the faculty to do it basically by showing them the evaluations from students who said, I'm just not learning enough of the skills that I need to prosper in a web environment.
Mm-hmm.
And from my understanding, I wasn't able to locate a curriculum for the whole 3 weeks, but I think they started kind of conservatively just with audio, photography, and was it video? I'm not sure. But three things like that that were basic skills that they might not otherwise pick up unless they took courses specifically for those, which is a very bulky and awkward unit. So it was more the idea of bringing them in 3 weeks early for intensive technology training that I thought was a good idea, and I still do. I think they probably want to work on what happens in those 3 weeks. But it's a recognition of changing demands in journalism education.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was smart.
I was more curious to understand what they were teaching them. I mean, you know, so what did they think was important for a journalist? It might give me some ideas about, you know, where I should.
Yeah, not very innovative on that end.
Right. Well, it's not bad. I mean, you know, if you think about it, what these guys are going to be doing is creating stuff that's audio, video,
yeah.
Pictures. Photography on the web is just a huge thing. I mean,
yeah.
And there are all these new tools coming on. On the other hand, it's likely that these are the things they already know how to do.
Some of them might, but it's not as likely as you'd think. A lot of people drawn to journalism don't have a technical background at all, are kind of
even in
phobic about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Huh. And they don't really represent, in most cases, the web-savvier people, although that is changing. But I'll tell you why it's important, and it transitions to something else I wanted to talk about. Yesterday, a boat left harbor
mm-hmm.
for what is called the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. And it's this floating pool of garbage out in the middle of the Pacific, which is created by a sort of circular pattern in ocean currents that deposits all the floating garbage in the Pacific into one general huge area of the ocean. And it's been known about for a long time, but we don't really have good knowledge of it, and as far as most people know, there's not any really good pictures of it. And there's a journalist who on Twitter calls herself the Garbage Girl. Her first name is Lindsay. I forget her second name. Who participated in the spot.us system for raising money to pursue an assignment she wanted. And I don't think we've talked about spot.us on this podcast, but it's a very interesting project by David Cohen, who used to work for me at newassignment.net. It actually comes out of some of the ideas that I floated for newassignment.net back in 2006, where people interested in seeing a story come to light would help fund that story through internet contributions. So it's an idea for alternative financing for investigative journalism. And SpotUs uses the internet to basically do crowdfunding for news assignments. And Lindsay submitted this pitch to go accompany a boat that was going to do some research on the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. And they raised enough money for her to go, and then they actually interested the New York Times science section in possibly publishing her account and her photos if they're good enough. And that development itself was significant because it was the New York Times starting to recognize that in the rebooted system of news, the funding for important acts of journalism actually could come from anywhere, just as the news can come from anywhere. And so she's on the boat right now. And what's important about it is that she's not only going to write about her experience and not only going to tell us what this garbage patch actually looks like, but she's going to photograph it, and she probably has a video camera as well. And it's important that she be able to do all of those things, because the chances of us raising enough money for a photographer and a reporter, you know, and a videographer are nil.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean? And so because it's going to be a challenge to find the resources for journalism, we need journalists to be able to do a lot of different things. And she also did something else that was clever and emblematic of the rebooted system for news, because she created a separate Twitter profile called The Garbage Girl specifically for this reporting project, so that if we want to follow the project and not necessarily her or not an entire news source, we can do that just by subscribing to The Garbage Girl. And I like that, because it's sort of like I'm along for the ride by following her, if you know what I mean, which I think is a potential way for to build interest in the news.
No, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
I got a tweet this morning from the Bay Bridge.
I saw that. Tell me about that.
Well, the Bay Bridge was closed this weekend because they did this most magnificent retrofit. I mean, I love this engineering project because, you know, it's like, as an engineer, it's the hardest thing in the world is to, like, completely replace a bridge piece by piece while the traffic still flows over it, you know.
Right.
You can't have outages. The Bay Bridge is like the central artery that connects the whole Bay Area. I mean, you know, we had to live without the Bay Bridge for, you know, a good 6 months after the Loma Prieta quake, and it was like huge, big deal that, you know, you just couldn't get around. So I think it's wonderful that they can do this. And and while they were doing it, they discovered a crack in the bridge, and everybody thought, oh, well, we're going to have to be closed for another day. And that was a big deal, because everybody that depended on the bridge took Friday off. You know, Friday was the only work day that they had to close the bridge, so it wasn't really a problem. But if they had to close it today, that would have been horribly disruptive. And so they were able to do it without closing it. And I get this tweet from the Bay Bridge saying, hey, it's open. And I thought, wow, this is really, I feel like I'm living in the future. So then I posted a post on inberkeley.com, and then it notified River 2 that I had updated it. And I just felt like, oh, this is it. I'm in heaven. You know, this is geek heaven. Because it's like, I feel in some ways what they're doing with the bridge and what we're doing with all this stuff is like, you know, complimentary.
Rebuilding the bridge, yeah.
You know, the other thing I thought of when you're telling this story is you're so right that, you know, there's only room for, like, a photographer. You have to have put them all in one body, right?
Yes, that's the idea.
We can go even further. And, you know, I'm sure, well, I think you would agree with this, that it would be a really good idea to teach everybody basic journalism skills so that maybe someday, you know, we won't even have, I mean, you know, it's like, I think 9/11 was probably the first huge story that was covered, maybe not largely by, but certainly in a significant proportion by just ordinary people who were there. I mean, the blogging world had already booted up at that point, so we were getting stories from people that were right there, you know. So what if those people knew a bit more about journalism? So, you know, my point is this, is that I'm sure I've said this on the podcast, is that disseminating the skills of journalism is a very, very, very important priority.
Yeah, and
I thought you would agree with that.
In the rebooting of journalism schools, which, of course, is an extremely important subject for me, one of the things that my profession has to begin to understand, and it's going to take a while, is that we have to develop an extension model.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know anything about the history of agricultural extension, but a lot of the land-grant colleges...
Michigan State. Part of the effort there was, I mean, you know, absolutely understand... Go ahead, I'm sorry for...
Yeah, so land-grant colleges were created in part to help educate the citizens of their state in things that would make them more productive and useful.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've been heavily involved from the beginning in agricultural extension, where you help teach farmers about the best way to grow crops and how to be more efficient. And you're not aiming your efforts exclusively at the students who come to you for degrees. You extend yourself outward to people in the state who need knowledge, right? So that's extension. And in journalism school, we need to develop a whole extension wing where we're teaching not the people who come to us because they want day jobs as journalists,
mm-hmm.
but the people out there who might be accidental journalists.
Well,
might
start
be
with people who came to NYU to get an education. You know, it's sort of
The people who came to NYU to get an education, absolutely.
Right. I mean, this is basic. You know, I wish they had taught accounting in college when I got my college degree. I managed to get out of college with no idea how to do a tax return.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that to me, you know, I mean, they would have said, well, you know, that's, you know, too mundane. You're here to get a liberal education, and you need to read the classics, and you need to learn some economics, not accounting. And I would disagree with that. I would say you're sending a person out into the world crippled, you know, because you know every one of these people, if they get a job, is going to be doing a tax return.
Sure.
And, you know, way to probably get the point made was, you know, if you teach them how to do tax returns, they might actually give you more money.
Well,
they would understand about deductions.
and it's the same in journalism. We should be able to teach all students for sure, but also people beyond the university.
Agreed, totally.
What is a report? How do you put together a report for your fellow citizens? And and how do you make it, I think this is the most important part, how do you make it verifiable? Because
mm-hmm.
in a lot of ways, that's the essence of journalism.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by make it verifiable?
Well, what I mean is if journalism is going to succeed in actually informing us and not just be an expressive thing, then we need to know that this is true. We need to know that it happened. And we make our reports verifiable when we include facts that others can check, when we go to the source, when we are there and we witness it and we videotape it, right? So what I mean by verifiability is that you give us the means for trusting it. You don't just claim it's true based on authority.
You show your work, basically.
You show your work, and you allow people to see why you say that this actually happened. And the essence of journalism as a truth-telling discipline is verification. And the more people who understand that, the stronger the news system as a whole will be. And when I get around to writing my post based on these podcasts, which would be to start outlining the rebooted system of news and what it really looks like,
mm-hmm.
which I've been taking mental notes on now for 4 or 5 months, the first principle, I think, of the system that we are trying to describe in these podcasts is that everybody is part of the news system.
Yes.
Every node in the system is
number one.
Part of it.
That's your Coltrane manifesto, you know.
That's the first thesis, right.
Absolutely.
And if everybody is a part of it, that means that everybody has to understand that they are enlisted in what I would call the verification troops. The number of people whose day job is journalism, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the verification troops, they extend all over the world.
Yes, absolutely. The whole thing is all over the world.
Yeah,
we've got reporters everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We've got eyes and ears and digital cameras and,
mm-hmm.
and cell phones and all this stuff.
All
these tools are everywhere. And there already have been reporters that have gone out to the garbage patch.
Yes.
We just somehow weren't connected to them. And it's great that we're actually deliberately, consciously sending one into it. But
right.
It's equally important that we think in terms of how do we get our information flow to be more serendipitous as opposed to deliberate. So that when we want to just reach out and say, okay, let's find out what's happening there, that we know that our network already extends to a boat that's going to drive right across it next week.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't we just say, look, take out your digital camera, take some pictures and upload it to this web address so that we can have a look, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the future, we hope the ship crew that passes by
right.
the Great Pacific Garbage Patch will understand. Hey, the rest of the world wants to know about this. They'll have the tools.
Yeah.
And they'll understand that we.
That was part of what Doc Searles talks about when he talks about vendor relationship management. Is that instead of having an employee having a company run a sale, like they do. And they say, buy a laptop computer half price or two for one or whatever. Instead, have the customer run a sale saying, I'm willing to pay half price for a laptop computer. Anybody want to sell me one?
Mm-hmm.
Or I want pictures of this. It's like what SpotUS is doing, right?
That was the idea of SpotUS, yeah.
Right, right. But somehow SpotUS's pitch has to make it out to the guys who are already there. Listen, let's move on because I want to ask you about jr.ly because you're now in the URL shortening business and you got like how many customers? You got one customer, right?
Yeah.
You are the whole thing, JR,
right? Yeah. Well,
tell
yeah.
What
do you want to know?
Well, what does it feel like to be an internet system operator?
Well, this is a new experience for me. I mean, I've owned domain names before. I own
quite
a few.
What were some of those domain names that you've owned?
Newassignment.net, pressthink.org for
mm-hmm.
two.
This is better because it's only five characters.
Yeah, offthebus.net I own.
That's got to be 25 characters right there.
Uh-huh. But now I own jr.ly, which is my own personal URL shortener, which you helped me to set up. And it was a new experience to go through that. And it I like it. It's like owning your own equipment in any domain instead of borrowing somebody's or paying a few quarters to use somebody else's. And it does make me feel like I own more of the infrastructure for what I do as opposed to relying on companies that don't necessarily have my interests at heart.
Right, which brings us to the extra link that Twitter put in there.
Yeah, Twitter is really pissing me off lately because it's slower than ever. It's not connecting, and it's timing out, for me at least, more than it has. And
is it just on this one function that it's doing that, or is it overall?
No. I'm finding it much harder to get to my replies. I'm waiting constantly for it to refresh my incoming stream. And I'm also finding that certain links, which aren't even bit.ly links, any links that I might click on will time out because they have to go to Twitter first before they go to my destination page.
Yeah.
So
you posted a question about that on my blog, asking what are these about, and you guessed correctly. I mean, they're trying to create some metrics. They want to know which links you click on, and they
mm-hmm.
Trying to tabulate that information across probably many thousands of users. Google does that too. I don't know if you've noticed that when you go to Google. Sometimes you'll be clicking through, and you'll watch the thing at the bottom go connecting to Google, and you go, why are you connecting to Google? I clicked on
yeah.
a link that was on some other site.
Exactly.
And it's also very slow, and, and Google, inexplicably, is never slow. I mean,
I noticed
there.
That, too. Google is slower than it has been.
Which is, well, that's true. They've had some problems lately, and this is, by the way, all sort of part of the whole lesson that everybody seems to be learning at once. Scoble had a huge problem. He lost all of his content on Scobalizer.com he got hacked, and every bit of data on there was taken off. And he also had become very dependent on FriendFeed, and FriendFeed sold to Facebook. And
right.
Now all of a sudden, you know, everybody has a whole different feeling about this. They don't want to build in there anymore. It's really, really changed a lot in terms of the way it feels.
Mm-hmm.
We still use it for what we're doing, but, you know,
it has
should
a different
always
feel,
be
yeah.
thinking about this whole idea that you just expressed so well, that having the say-so, it's very American, right? You own your own house, you own
right.
your own car, you know. You basically don't want, you know, this is what all the, you know, wing nuts say, oh, I don't want the government involved in healthcare, right? Well, you don't want, yeah, that's, yeah, and, you know, that's going to happen, right? But you don't want all these companies sort of involved in your own free expression. That's the thing that you don't want. And,
right.
And so we have to learn a whole new philosophy. I've been talking with Scoble a lot privately about this, is that, you know, this is what we're doing, another corner turn, basically bringing the internet back into it and, you know, whatever. So I think this is all really good stuff. I think it's bad that Twitter is doing this to you, but I think in a way it's good, because it's a you know, what they call a learning teaching opportunity. What do they call it?
Teachable moment.
Teachable moment. That's right. It's a teachable moment.
And
I think that it's kind of cool, because we were talking about teaching undergrads about how to be journalists. I think that they ought to learn a little bit about being an internet system operator too. That would be a good thing for everybody to have a feeling for, an experience of.
When you own your own, you realize what freedom is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to give an update on another thing we've talked about. I now have a name for this concern that I've been expressing on Rebooting the News. The backstory button. That's what I'm now calling this idea. You know how most news sites now have gotten their act together enough so that they have share buttons, you know, send this to Twitter, send this to Facebook. They need a new button called the backstory button.
Interesting.
Which,
I like it.
Yeah, which would be, if you need to know the big narrative out of which this news story arises, click here and we'll send you there. Which would enable a market in syndicated explainers to arrive.
Yes. Isn't that a great idea? And they
so if I
that,
write
right?
the definitive explainer about, let's say, net neutrality, right, that really explains what that is, then the backstory button will take me there if I need to know it. And there can be...
They can get some money for that too, right?
And they can get the money for it. They can get,
based
on how many people use it, right? You could also, as a news provider, you could have your choice of explainers, right? There wouldn't necessarily be one, but there would be a list of the most.
You could have a Republican one, a Democratic one.
Well, what you want is the backstory explainer that actually does the best job, right?
Yeah, but yeah, you live in some utopia where everybody best job means what exactly?
Well, I'm not sure. It's not a simple question.
I know some Republicans that really wouldn't want to hear from some people in Berkeley, you know.
True. Okay, we can't solve all the problems of politicized news, you know.
Yeah, but that's fine. You know.
Still, the backstory button would be part of the rebooted system of
news. FYI, 90 seconds.
Right. And so I just want to update us on
But
progress.
You're doing the inspiration, right?
My inspiration of the week is an easy one. It's the authors of the German Internet Manifesto, which came out today in English. It's a bunch of, I guess 15 advanced internet journalists and web thinkers who put together this really interesting manifesto with 17 different claims that are part of the rebooted system of news. And we'll link to it on our site.
Yeah.
But what it says, just to give you an idea of how radical it is, tradition is not a business model. More is more. There's no such thing as too much information. The internet improves journalism. So these are people frustrated by the slow pace of change who are just declaring that the internet is the future of journalism, and people have to begin to accept it. And it's kind of like a ringing call for the kinds of things that you and I believe in. So they're an inspiration.
Okay, that's
because
it. Okay, we got to go.
We got to go,
but thanks so much. I look forward to reading that. It sounds great. See you next week.
Been a pleasure. Bye.